Welcome back to another edition of the Pocket Protectors Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Got the gang with me this evening here to talk about some things. And we're just going to go ahead and kick it to the doctor right off the bat here. Eric, what's going on? What room of your house are we in this week?
The living room. Yeah, I just finished upgrading final exams, so really haven't moved in a few hours. So kind of excited to chat football and the Pro Bowl and all that good stuff.
Well, if you need to move around, you know, don't be shy about it. You know, on my other podcast, Yinka has been known to, you know, go out, deliver a pizza, drive an Uber, pick up a buddy, you know, all while recording. So, you know, if you need to move it around, it's all right. It's all good.
Appreciate the hustle.
And our man on the best coast,
what's up?
He's been a little bit mad online today.
I'm heated.
Luke, how's it going?
I was doing great before I saw the Pro Bowl announcements. Actually, I'm mostly happy with it because I'm happy for Adam Thielen and Anthony Barr, who I didn't think was going to make it. But there's a snub, and I'm mad about it.
Well, tell them why you're mad, son. What has you so riled up on this fine evening?
They left off the best safety in the league from the Pro Bowl. They I just did a Twitter thread about this. Harrison Smith didn't make the Pro Bowl. And instead, the NFC safeties are Malcolm Jenkins, Landon Collins, and Earl Thomas, all three of whom have had very good seasons. I wouldn't turn my nose up at any single one of them if Harrison Smith was also in that group. But it's just, I don't understand what a man has to do to escape the small market and get onto the Pro Bowl. Harrison Smith was the best safety in the league this year, like, by a long shot. A lot of that was because the people that he's usually competing with, Eric Berry didn't play a lot. Cam Chancellor was hurt a lot. Earl Thomas had to do more things in Seattle than he wasn't able to really thrive amidst the Legion of Boom like he usually is, just because of injuries around him. So I thought this was really going to be the year that finally we could finally get Harrison Smith the recognition that he deserves, because he is just genuinely the best playing player at that position, and he still gets left off the list. There is no safety in the league that can do everything as well as Harrison Smith does. People will talk about Earl Thomas and say, hey, maybe he's a better cover safety than Harrison Smith. While statistically that's not true, I can yield to that and say, okay, that's your opinion. Sure, I respect your opinion that Earl Thomas is better in coverage than Harrison Smith. But he's useless in the run. He doesn't produce at all when he's asked to go down in the box, and Harrison Smith is incredibly productive in the run. Landon Collins might be a better box safety. He's been really productive in the run. He's been a great blitzer, and he's been decent in coverage. Harrison Smith has been leaps and bounds better in coverage. There are safeties that usually specialize in, you know, being a free safety or strong safety or box safety. Usually you have safeties that, like, maybe they're like a fourth linebacker, or maybe they're like, you know, an extra cornerback. Harrison Smith can be everything. He's like if you had Earl Thomas, but when you need him to be Cam Chancellor, he can morph into that. It's like having a whole Legion of Boom boiled down to one player. People still don't know who the hell he is, and I'm mad about it.
But I guess, do you think that some of what you just kind of described and why he's so good is why he maybe doesn't get the recognition that he should get nationally? In that, you know, if you're going to the traditional stats, because I know you can make a really great case for him using, you know, PFF and the information that they have there. But if you go and look on, you know, just like NFL.com or Pro Football Reference, and just look at the stats that people would traditionally look at, like, you know, maybe not the people who are as into, you know, the numbers and the analytics as we are, he doesn't really stand out in any one thing, which could also play. And yeah, the small market is part of it. But if you're not watching tape on these guys, you're just going to go and quickly skim over, you know, who's leading the league in interceptions, or which safeties are racking up the most tackles, or who has the most sacks, or whatever. He's not really at the top of any of those lists. So I guess, could that be a factor that's hurting Harrison Smith when it comes to, you know, getting these kind of postseason accolades like the Pro Bowl?
I could definitely see that if he didn't have more interceptions than all three of those NFC safeties. Those NFC safeties all have 2-2. They've given up 2 touchdowns and have 2 interceptions. Harrison Smith has 3 picks and has not given up a touchdown yet, and we're in mid-December, which is absurd. I don't know where his tackle stats are at, but I guess people look at that for safeties, which is really weird, because raw tackles don't, like, usually if a safety's making your tackle, it's not a good rep for someone. So I do get that, like, it's a popularity contest, and I shouldn't be this worked up about the Pro Bowl because, like, it's voted on by people who have no idea what they're looking at. But it seemed like this, like, if he's not going to make it this year, he's not going to make it any year. And for a guy who should probably, you know, he's been in the top three of his position for, like, his entire career. And if he keeps that up for five more years or whatever, he probably has a Hall of Fame ballot, and he's not going to make any Pro Bowls, and that's going to be, like, a huge knock against him in the Hall of Fame, and it's going to be total BS. Because people don't know how to evaluate safeties.
I think what I would push back on there is that in the Les Frazier year, Les Frazier wasn't using Harrison Smith correctly. So when he was kind of stuck in that two deep role, he wasn't the guy we know now. So that was the only kind of initial part of his career where he wasn't being used right. And you could see it when Zimmer came in, his PFF grade shot through the roof because he was being used in a way to maximize his skill set. But he wasn't great starting out, and it wasn't really his fault then. But Eric, what were you going to say?
Well, I mean, I think so. One of the things that, so I'm looking at his Pro Football Reference page to kind of, like, you know, what if you didn't have information like we have? And, you know, Smith, well, for one, he's made two Pro Bowls, I think, as an alternate, right? So those are going to show up, you know, when he's, you know, like, when it comes time to, like, evaluate his career. But, you know, you're talking about a guy who has 15 career interceptions, 4 career touchdowns, 9 career sacks. And I do think so, like, early on in his career, he was making those splash plays. And now it's one of those things where he's kind of an eraser. So I know, you know, some people have done articles on, like, you know, when he comes down into the box, he's sort of, like, takes away route combinations that the other team can run. Well, that's not going to be him playing kind of that Les Frazier deep safety coming in and picking a pass off. It's one of those things where he's just a catalyst for defensive awesomeness, right? And the fact that the fact that teams, like, shy away from him is, you know, a huge feather in his cap. And I just don't think that the league is sort of wised up to that. I will say there's a point of pride I have here. So if you go down about to the bottom third of Harrison Smith's profile, he did make the first team All-Pro PFF team in 2014 and 2015. And that does show up on Pro Football Reference. So he will make All-Pro teams this year. I still am holding out hope that he'll make the Associated Press All-Pro team, even though he doesn't make the Pro Bowl. But he will get, I think, sufficient recognition throughout his career. It's just really annoying that this is the season where not only are the Vikings, you know, a top three defense in the NFL right now, but their best player defensively, I don't even think it's close, is not going to get the recognition he deserves.
And the other guy, the other snub that doesn't have me quite as heated because I didn't really expect him to make it, but Linval Joseph was a huge snub who really should be in the Pro Bowl. But I believe, correct me if I'm wrong on this, guys, but I believe there is not a single nose tackle in the entire Pro Bowl roster. I think all the interior defensive linemen are three techs, which is just kind of a catastrophic issue for the Pro Bowl. Like, it's a whole position that's just not represented because the Pro Bowl voters don't know how to differentiate between what defensive tackles are doing.
Yeah, I think that that's true. And it's the same thing with, like, that's why it's good that Anthony Barr made the Pro Bowl, because usually, you know, for the longest time they had a difficult time differentiating between, like, DeAndre Levy and Vaughn Miller, you know, edge guys versus off the ball players who don't have the sack numbers. But it does sound like they're at least getting good at differentiating between off the ball linebackers and edge players. I still think it's a little out of whack there, but now you're talking about, like, defensive tackles. And Joseph made the Pro Bowl last year. I'm assuming that after injuries and all that kind of stuff, he'll make the Pro Bowl again this year, just like Smith. But it is annoying because he certainly is a catalyst. I mean, the fact that he can take on two blockers and sort of, free players like Hunter and Kendricks and those guys to make tackles on run plays. And the fact that he's got, you know, 7.5 sacks the last 2 years as a nose tackle, also points to sort of how good he has been, kind of as an all around player.
Yeah, Eric, can you touch on a couple of things there that we've talked about offline, but it's really, you know, and part of the issue that you have, and one of the things that we talked about kind of early in the year, was Xavier Rhodes and his grade. And, you know, defensive players don't get a lot of opportunities, and so sometimes it takes a little while for them to kind of end up where we would expect when you're looking at them for, you know, Pro Football Focus and grades and things like that. But then also, as we're looking now, and we're trying to parse out like Harrison Smith versus some other guys, when you look at the traditional stats, sometimes it can be difficult to really figure out what the impact is of a player, say like a Linval Joseph, who, yeah, he's had some crazy games this year where he's got a ton of tackles and tackles for losses and sacks. But oftentimes, you know, a nose tackle just isn't going to show up in the stat sheet very often. It's going to be the players around him that benefit from the efforts of that player playing very well. So, you know, Linval Joseph, you know, when he's in, the defense is obviously a much better one. And Harrison Smith, by most accounts, by most fans, would say he is the most important or best player on the Vikings defense. Could you make a case for him, like, being the actual MVP of the team? And then I guess to take it another step forward, what would it take for, I guess, a safety or really any defensive player to be the actual MVP of the league, if you were looking at it from, you know, a statistical or analytical kind of way versus just kind of, he got a lot of sacks and so, you know, he's the guy and we know his name type of thing?
Right. So, I mean, you have to look at things from the perspective of their value. And what's really interesting is that, you know, playing in the defensive backfield, impact plays in the defensive backfield are more valuable on a play-for-play basis than they are up front. So, you know, and I think I sent this to you guys, but like a positive play as a pass rusher is worth about half an expected point. So, you know, if you make like a, you know, you beat the block guy in front of you, you get a pressure, on average, it's about half of an expected point. A positive play in coverage is worth about twice as much as that, about, you know, 0.9 expected points. And so, you know, on that, on one end, it's clearly better, you know, to make a play in the backfield, and you can kind of understand why that's true. You know, when a pressure occurs on the quarterback can still make a positive play offensively after that occurs. Whereas if you knock a pass down, if you intercept the pass, that basically is it for the offense. So, there are more benefits to having solid play on the defensive backfield. Obviously, those two things are correlated. But things are more variable on the back end as well. As you said, you know, guys like Xavier Rhodes, Harrison Smith, it's going to take them maybe four times as many games to have as many gradable plays as it does for a guy like Everson Griffin. So, you know, guys like Everson Griffin, their statistics stabilize over time far more quickly than defensive backs. So on one side, we understand defensive linemen and pass rushers better than we understand coverage men, but what coverage men do is more valuable than what pass rushers do. So in that respect, you know, so to kind of come all the way back and answer your question, a player would have to have one of those seasons where, you know, you're getting, you know, 20 sacks or you're getting 10 interceptions, which doesn't really happen anymore because there are quarterbacks that don't even throw 10 interceptions in a season anymore. And, you know, if you look at things like WAR or expected points, like last season, the defensive player with the highest WAR in my calculation was Khalil Mack, and it was about 1.75 wins above replacement. And, of course, he was defensive player of the year, so it makes some sense. But there were 13 offensive players with more WAR than him, including four quarterbacks who had more than four wins above replacement. And so you're going to kind of have to need a season where almost, you know, kind of like this year where a lot of backup quarterbacks are playing okay, but, you know, you still have the existence of guys like Tom Brady, guys like Carson Wentz and so forth that are kind of driving the wins above replacement. You're going to have a year where the highest quarterback in wins above replacement is like 2.5, and a guy like Khalil Mack gets 25 sacks, or a guy like, you know, so the highest defensive back we had last year was Chris Harris. A guy like Chris Harris gets 10, 11 interceptions. I mean, to me, that would be the recipe for a defensive player winning MVP. I can't remember. I think Lawrence Taylor was the last defensive player to win it, and that was back in a time where quarterbacks weren't nearly as good and didn't nearly have the impact that they have now. And I have a hard time seeing, like, you know, a defensive player you know, kind of the pendulum swinging back in that direction again. But you never know.
Yeah, and Luke, from your perspective, you kind of think about it and think about the Vikings and the team and kind of where we are now and this season. I guess if you were kind of trying to rank out like players by importance, and you could do this kind of just how you feel about it or what you've done kind of looking and researching articles that you've written, I guess how would you, like how many offensive players would you go through before you got to the defense? Or from your perspective, are we starting with defensive players and kind of working down and eventually making it to the Case Keenums and the Adam Thielens?
On the Vikings specifically, or like league-wide?
Yeah, the Vikings. On the Vikings.
On the Vikings? Oh, yeah. That's a really good question. Like, I guess the most important player is probably Case Keenum, the most important player. I don't know if he's the one who's added the most value. Statistically, almost certainly, but just because of the scheme and the things he's been asked to do and the how much the offense has like asked him to rely on the players around him, I'd probably go through Thielen, and then I'd probably get to defenders. Maybe Elflein has been up there just as the center. I think the center has a lot of value and a lot of statistically unrepresented value just in like calling protections and stuff. And then just being mobile on screens. And then I'd get to the Griffins and the Rhodes. And I think Barr is probably asked to do the hardest job on the field, but I guess Harrison Smith is probably the best at his position. And then I'd put Linval Joseph somewhere in that conversation as well. But I think Barr has the toughest job on the field just because he's asked to do like the most athletically difficult things. Like we saw this week in the Bengals game, linebackers being asked to do similar things and just being like hideously incapable of that. And then Jerick McKinnon got 100 yards receiving. But like,
got me to the finals of my fantasy league, so I'm all right with it.
Yeah, worth it, right? I lost to Yinka in the Vikings defense. I'm not mad.
Yeah, you got to take those.
But, like, the linebackers are asked to do incredibly difficult things. But I'd probably put Harrison Smith near the top. I'd put Xavier Rhodes near the top, probably in, the, like, top five of important players. And then, so Rhodes, Smith, Keenum, Adam Thielen, which I think would be an outlier for a wide receiver, but I really do think he's added that much. And then probably, like, Joseph or Griffin or Barr would be the fifth.
Yeah, and Eric, I guess based on what you've seen, and I know, again, we've talked about it a little bit, but I guess where would, like, a wide receiver rank typically if we were kind of, you know, looking at, you know, which positions are actually the most important on just, like, on an average team on a given year?
Yeah, I mean, a guy like Thielen would be – so Julio Jones last year was sixth in WAR. Mike Evans was eighth. I think Adam Thielen would be in the top 15 discussion just because of how many plays he's made. And if you dive a little deeper, sort of like, you know, how much he's meant to the quarterback position for the Vikings, like, I think Adam Thielen's probably worth two wins, you know, above replacement. And, you know, that's substantial. I think, you know, catching the football is certainly, you know, second or third to throwing the football in terms of value in the NFL. So, I have no doubt that, like, you know, especially, you know, Diggs is a good football player. He hasn't been as productive as Thielen, but I think those two guys, you could probably smash together and talk about three wins just between those two players.
All right. And so I guess why is it so difficult for, you know, any one defender to have the amount of impact that really any of these players on offense are having?
I think it's because, you know, the ability to force a conclusion to a play, you know, so like if, and we saw this a little bit last year with the Vikings defense, like what did the Vikings were so that their ability to put quarterbacks under siege in the first like 5-6 games of the year was so substantial. And, you know, kind of around midseason, teams just started to throw quicker against them and really isolate the weaknesses in the Vikings defense, which were, you know, the slot when Captain Munnerlyn was banged up, or the linebacker position when Anthony Barr wasn't playing particularly well. And no matter how much Harrison Smith wanted to influence that, or no matter how much Xavier Rhodes wanted to influence those outcomes, you know, they were impotent in doing that, right? Whereas if you are a quarterback wide receiver combination, with small exceptions, like, you know, the other team having a top five cornerback in the league who tracks receivers, you are going to be able to impose your will, right? And, you know, and there's enough plays in the game where, you know, Antonio Brown is going to get his. We've seen that numerous games for Pittsburgh in prime time. No matter how bad Pittsburgh's played, they just go to their best player over and over and over again, whether that be Bell or Brown. And, you know, that is – you can't funnel teams towards Harrison Smith defensively, right? You have to kind of have this really large, good, cohesive unit where teams have no choice but to attack your strengths, and then, you know, you see outcomes like that. And even then, plays like interceptions, plays like fumbles, plays like sacks, those are still like really random outcomes. And so you would almost need to string a ton of those together over the course of a 16-game season. And that kind of stuff is just really unlikely to me. So that's kind of why we're going to have a hard time, in my opinion, seeing, you know, players on the defensive side of the ball get, you know, votes for MVP and things like that.
So, Luke, based on everything you've just heard from Eric, what would your campaign, or what would we need to switch up in order to get, you know, Harrison Smith the recognition and get him into the Pro Bowl for next season? What is it that you'd want to switch up or change in order to get him the recognition that he deserves?
Abolish the Pro Bowl and only pay attention to all of them. No, I mean, for all those reasons, it's tough to get defenders recognition, and it's tough to get safeties recognition, especially like defensive backs have an inverse correlation between like how good they are and how much attention they get. Because if you're good, you don't get targeted, and then you don't hear their name, and then you don't think about it. Whereas if you're like, I feel like, I can't think of a cornerback off the top of my head who was like this, but there are cornerbacks who are maybe like underestimated, then you throw at them a lot, they make a lot of plays, and they get a big reputation. I want to say like maybe Malcolm Butler would make a bunch of plays, but people didn't think that he was going to be good enough, so they went at him more. Then you get a bunch of pass defense, then you get a big reputation, and now you're Malcolm Butler. I think one thing that I could solve about the Pro Bowl is just I would love to apply PFF's player participation delineations to the Pro Bowl. So instead of just saying defensive tackles, defensive ends, outside linebackers, which are kind of meaningless distinctions in today's NFL, PFF has player participation, which like divides players up by not where they were listed, but where they actually lined up, and has a lot more intelligent ways of divvying players up. So you could get Linval Joseph in the Pro Bowl if you were voting maybe three techs and three nose tackles, and then your three techs would be like Kaywon Short, Damon Harrison, Linval Joseph, and you could get that. But because like it's a huge problem that people are voting on defensive tackles, and because nose tackles don't get any of the recognition, they'll always lose out to three techs, which isn't really correct, but it's not like we can teach the entire football watching population about the difference between a three tech and a nose tackle. I do think that like when you set up the voting, you can set up those categories based off of something that PFF is already charting and create designations that way. So you have, you know, you don't have stuff like Anthony, you know, having to choose between Anthony Barr and Von Miller, who do entirely different things on the field. And in terms of Harrison Smith, I don't really know how you get him more recognition. I mean, he's doing everything he's asked to do on the field at an elite level, and people still just don't really know who he is. I don't know. Earl Thomas retires, maybe.
I think that might be it. But you just raised an interesting point. So I just wanted to get Eric's take on this before we kind of start to wrap things up. Is you know, so right now, when we look at the NFC, the interior linemen that were chosen were Fletcher Cox, Aaron Donald, and Gerald McCoy. So, you know, obviously three techs. Generally speaking, Eric, would the three tech be considered the more valuable position if you were looking at it from a PFF standpoint?
Relative to nose tackle, I would say so, only because three techniques can be disruptive against the pass and the run, whereas a traditional nose tackle, you know, Linval Joseph, as valuable as he is, he doesn't play as much on passing downs as some other players, and stopping the run. I have to look at if it's the same thing as last week, but the worst eight teams in the NFL in yards per play allowed in the run game are all going to make the playoffs. So like stopping the run is not like super important as like a value thing. So, you know, a three technique is going to be a disruptive player on both passes and runs, whereas a nose tackle, like Damon Harrison's a fantastic football player. But, you know, it's like, it's a little bit more valuable than having like the best fullback in the league. You know what I'm saying? And that's where, like, I like Luke's idea of like doing participation. But we should also fold in like how valuable the spot is. So for example, there used to be a lot of like discussions in the PFF chat about like whether to include Justin Tucker in the top 100 players or Marcel Reese or somebody like that. And like the discussion, like to me, there's no discussion just because like as valuable as Justin Tucker is, his value over a replacement kicker is not nearly as high as, you know, I would even say somebody like Eric Kendrick's value over replacement linebacker, even though you know, Kendrick's been kind of average-ish this year. Yeah, I think all of these discussions should also have value embedded into them.
Well, awesome. That's all the questions I had for you guys today, and I think we allowed Luke to appropriately vent all of the pent-up anger he had today at the Pro Bowl. Eric. I know you've been grading papers and stuff. Have you been putting any work in with the other grades and things that you work with there to let us know, you know, which teams are good and, you know, to make people angry on the internet about, you know, ranking teams in the wrong order and things like that. Have you been able to put any work in on that stuff? And when are we going to see that this week?
Yeah, that's coming out tomorrow, the PFF ELO. We had the PFF spread picks will be out on Friday. We had quite the sweat this week, so we had San Francisco against Tennessee, that went down to the wire. We had the over in the Miami-Buffalo game, and that went all the way down to the wire. And then we actually had Oakland +3 on Sunday Night Football. So even though I advocated for the touchback rule, I got screwed over by it in the PFF spread picks on Sunday night. So that was rough. And then we had Atlanta covering last night, which didn't actually happen. So we had a 500 week, unfortunately. This week is a new week. It looks like with the news about Aaron Rodgers, the Vikings are -9. 9 points is an awful lot to lay for a road team, but you have to wonder with the Vikings, motivation, trying to get a 2 seed on their way to their home Super Bowl. Packers kind of giving up on the season. I wonder, much like last week where people are a little bit nervous to lay, 12.5 points against Cincinnati, I wonder if the Vikings are going to be worth laying that many points down this week. I don't know if they'll make our article or not, but that'll be an interesting one for people to think about.
And kind of along those lines, and not necessarily from a straight betting standpoint, but I need to stream a defense for fantasy purposes this week. Like what defenses should I be taking a look at out there that might have a good week?
Oh, that's a great question. So let me look at week 16 here. So one of them that's I like would be Denver. Baltimore against Indianapolis. Denver played Indianapolis last week. Baltimore at home on Saturday. You get to if you're gonna have to watch that game anyway, you might as well have something riding on it, as Pete Rose would say. So I like the Ravens against the Colts if you can get them. A sneaky good one would also be the Los Angeles Rams. Marcus Mariota has something like 12 clean pocket interceptions this year. So interceptions thrown while not pressured. So he's like, liable to throw you some interceptions. I don't know. Those are ones that I like. Even like the Eagles versus the Raiders Monday night, Christmas night. I think the Raiders are probably another one of those teams that might give up. And Derek Carr throwing some interceptions to some Eagles players might be in the future there. So
and also in the future we might have to have is Derek Carr actually a good quarterback? And have us go through that and see if you can help us answer that question. Because when you look at just some regular non-advanced metrics, he doesn't look particularly great and he's making a lot of money.
That's a really good point. And we, you know, when we were studying quarterbacks this summer for PFF, like in depth, a lot of times we were getting the signal that Carr wasn't as good as we had all thought. And, you know, we went back and tried to drill back into it and say, well, why is that true? And sometimes, you know, in hindsight, it's good to trust your numbers a little bit. Like, maybe Carr is only a third tier quarterback or something like that, you know. And he sort of has shown that this year. I wonder how much of that is losing our guy Musgrave in Oakland as he was shown the door after this season. Maybe, you know, sometimes as we've seen with Shurmur, when you give offensive coordinators second chances, they can sometimes, reward you.
I want to compare Derek Carr to Bortles now in hindsight, because I was looking at Brett Hundley for like game preview reasons of the last four games, and Blake Bortles kept popping off the page in all the rankings. He's been balling, and he's like a bona fide good quarterback now, and I don't know how to handle it.
Just to kind of hint, one of the games that I, because there's a lot of big spreads this weekend, I still think San Francisco is undervalued in the betting market at +4 at home. Anytime, in my opinion, that you have the better quarterback at home giving or getting points, it's not a bad bet. I think Jimmy Garoppolo, continues his hot streak this week.
Jimmy G.
Or as George calls him, Jimmy Jesus.
And Luke, I know you dropped a Shurmur article today. You want to preview that? They'll give us a little tease on what you talked about in there?
Yeah, go head over to Purple PTSD and check it out. There's been a lot of talk about Pat Shurmur leaving to be a head coach, but there haven't been any rumors. All the articles that have been like, is Pat Shurmur leaving, have just kind of been like, he's a good coordinator and that would kind of make sense, but there's been no rumor. So I looked at like, well, he's a good coordinator. He's a failed head coach. Do people like him become head coaches again? Or what does it take to be kind of a second chance head coach like Hugh Jackson or Doug Marrone or Mike Mularkey or even guys like Andy Reid, and kind of what circumstances led to that? So I went through all of the former head coaches that became head coaches again to see if Pat Shurmur could go on the same road. So go over to Purple PTSD and check out that little profile.
I like it. Well, gentlemen, thank you for coming here and recording with me once again this evening. It's always a good time. And yeah, you guys, thank you for listening. Had a lot of good time. Had a lot of fun recording this one here. So yeah, that's all I got. My name's Jason Brown. You've been listening to the Pocket Protectors Podcast. Y'all have a good one.